ICBMs have also gone down in the visible presence of UFOs at American air bases responsible for our nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles. And one of those missile sites is Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana, north of Helena and about 100 miles south of the Canadian border that Bob Salas has talked so much about. Well, Malmstrom is one of three U.S. Air Force bases that maintains and operates now in the modern age 450 Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missiles, and they are stored at Malmstrom Air Force Base underground, Warren Air Force Base near Cheyenne, Wyoming, and Minot Air Force Base in Minot, North Dakota. When you look at a map, as I have it at earthfiles.com, you will see that those three locations form an almost perfect triangle. 43 years ago, on March 16, 1967, at Malmstrom Air Force Base, the Echo flight crew was 60 feet underground in the Flight Launch Control Center that was located about 90 miles east of Great Falls. And to everyone's astonishment, large reddish-orange glowing aerial disks were seen by the security alert teams. And simultaneously, 10 Minutemen intercontinental ballistic missiles started going offline, one at a time, every second in some reports. That meant 10 of America's most secure military weapons 60 feet underground had been controlled and shut down by a force from above ground. And then, incredibly, the same thing happened 8 days later on March 24, 1967, to Oscar flight. 10 more ICBMs were shut down one at a time every second, is some reports. One of the U.S. Air Force personnel in a missile bunker 60 feet underground was First Lieutenant then Robert Salas, who had graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy in 1964. While in the U.S. Air Force, Bob Salas received his master's degree in aerospace engineering in 1969. By April 1971, he received an honorable discharge as a U.S. Air Force captain, and he went to work for Martin Marietta and Rockwell International as an aerospace engineer working on space shuttle proposals. Then in 1974, Bob Salas was hired by the Federal Aviation Administration in aircraft certification and aircraft structures and worked as a structural engineer for aircraft until 1995. Since retirement from the FAA, Bob has taught high school mathematics in Ojai, California, and tutors students in math. On September 27th, at the National Press Club in Washington, Bob joined six other witnesses to the Echo and Oscar flight shutdowns in a presentation that he had organized with UFO investigator Robert Hastings. They want the press and the public to know that it is not true when the U.S. government authorities say there never was a UFO threat to national security, then or now. And here is retired U.S. Air Force Captain Robert Salas.
We're all saying things that are directly in conflict with what the Air Force has claimed these many years, and that is that no UFO incident has ever impacted national security. That's patently false. It's a lie. It's just an outright lie. And so we've got a confrontation now between us and the Air Force.
And no one from the government off the record has ever approached you to say, keep your mouth shut.
I think they tried to keep my mouth shut. In 1969, I was transferred to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to finish up my master's degree. And not long after I arrived, I was ordered to go to the base psychiatrist's office. And I didn't know why. But I went ahead and went to the hospital. Base psychiatrist orderly came out and wanted me to talk to the psychiatrist. I asked him what reason was I called in. I didn't complain about anything. He said, well, the base psychiatrist will let you know that. And I said, no, I'm not going to go back and talk to him about anything because I knew that it would go on my record. Later, the orderly comes out and here released me. I suspect that they wanted to hear my UFO story so they could put it on the record. That's the closest I got to where they put pressure on me to keep my mouth shut.
if you had talked to the psychiatrist, they would be able to hold that over you as a question of your credibility for the rest of your career and life.
That's correct.
Did anybody in the U.S. Air Force or any other agency say, this is why we have to keep this under wraps?
No. No one ever talked to me about this. After the next morning, when I was debriefed in my squadron commander's office, and we were told to sign a non-disclosure statement, which I did, we were told never to talk about it again. And nobody ever talked to us about it again, and we never spoke about it until 1994.
But did you ask back in 1967, why are we being asked to sign non-disclosure agreements about something as significant as this?
I certainly did. My commander, first question I asked him when I walked into his office, I said, was this some kind of an Air Force exercise? And he said, absolutely not. And then the guy from AFOSI just said, sign here, and we will never speak of this again. I even wanted to know why I should sign anything, because I had above top secret clearance already. But he said, no, this specific incident, you have to sign this.
And the AFOSI agent standing next to him, he wasn't going to allow you to have any dialogue about this. It was sign this non-disclosure if you want to have a career?
Exactly. In fact, a day or two, maybe a week later, one or two of the guards called me at home and wanted to sit down and talk to me. They were very upset with this whole thing. They couldn't understand it. And I had to turn them down. I said, can't talk about it. You know, I've signed this non-disclosure thing, and I can't talk about it again.
Did you know then at the time that you all were dealing with something from outer space that was not human?
Absolutely, we knew it. These were not aircraft. We even discussed this in a first phone conversation I had with the guards. They assured me these were not airplanes. So they knew they were something from elsewhere.
And in fact, on March 16th, 1967, one of the Echo Flight security policemen, and I'm quoting from your 1999 summary of all of this, and you reported, one of the security policemen was so affected by this encounter with one of these big red glowing objects in the sky that he never again returned to missile security duty, close quote.
That's true. In fact, that happened not only at Echo, but at Oscar Flight. I know of at least one case where one of the security guards lost control of himself and wandered off. You know, they had to bring people out to pick him up and take him out to the base hospital. I mean, he was just out of it.
And how were the SAT team describing what they were seeing?
It was a reddish-orange pulsating object. It was about 30 feet in diameter, and it was just sitting there. He had all the guards out there with their weapons out, and he was frightened, very frightened.
You were getting these descriptions down underground about how deep?
Yeah, I was 60 feet underground. We were locked in. We were obligated to stay there until we were relieved by another crew, obviously because we were in control of 10 nuclear weapons.
The Boeing investigators concluded, and this is reading from your 1999 summary, quote, to reproduce the effects on the ICBMs that went down, a 10-volt pulse would have to be introduced into the data line. How did they reach that conclusion?
One of the Boeing engineers, Mr. Reigert, did a bench test on the guidance and control package. We got information when the missiles went down that we had guidance and control system failure and logic coupler failure. The logic coupler is part of the computer system that helps orient the missile in flight on target. So I think he did a bench test. In other words, he had the equipment on a bench and input a certain signal at a certain wavelength and was able to shut the system down. We have an Air Force document stating that this signal, they use the generic term of EMP or electromagnetic pulse, would have to have been an external signal. So this is one of the conclusions the Boeing investigative team came to. The internal system could not have generated such a signal.